The UN says that humanity stands on the brink of catastrophic man-made climate change. But is it true?
Not a chance. But we do stand on the brink of catastrophic government policies that threaten to ruin the nation our forefathers built and defended against tyranny.
So what drives the climate scare, Jay?
Besides simple ignorance, the scare is driven by corporate greed and the desire of government to control all aspects of our lives, Tom.
Is this part of something more sinister?
Indeed it is. Whether it's climate change or a pandemic or socialism, it really means sacrificing your rights and accepting the tyranny of the fourth branch of government, the bureaucracy. It must be stopped.
This is The Other Side of the Story with Dr. Jay Lair and Tom Harris of the International Climate Science Coalition.
I have the pleasure of introducing my co-host, Dr. Jay Lair.
And I have the pleasure of introducing my co-host, Tom Harris.
Well, thanks, Jay. It's great to be on with you. It's unusual for a scientist to be involved in media. Well, how did that come about, Jay?
Well, Tom, it goes back about 30 years. In 1991, I published a book. It was a compilation of environmental scientists writing about how their work had been distorted in the media. The book was called Rational Readings on Environmental Concerns. I was able to locate 50 scientists around the world that pretty much told the same story. Whatever they were working on, their work had been distorted in the media. That book netted me well over 100 radio interviews, and a number of people suggested that I did a good job and maybe I would have my own radio show. And I thought it was a great idea, but the opportunity never arrived until America Out Loud suggested that I team up with you, who I'd been writing with for many years, and try our own radio program. And I could not be more excited about it.
And you've had, wow, geez, must be thousands of media articles, of course. And how many books have you got out now?
I think I'm at 32 now, either authored, co-authored, or edited. It becomes almost a hobby. My first book was 1978, and I think I have never gone a year that I wasn't either working on a book or published a book. And it's been exciting. It makes you a career learner, and I've really enjoyed that aspect of my career, which makes being on the radio and hopefully having an audience of thousands of people learning what the title of our show now is going to be, The Other Side of the Story.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of interesting. Since you went to Princeton, a natural question is, were you there at the same time as Einstein?
Well, it's funny that you asked, Tom, because I don't think I've ever given a lecture, and I've given thousands of them around the world, where I didn't mention that while I was at Princeton, I had a nodding acquaintance with Albert Einstein. That's something that drives my son crazy. I was 17 years old, and what I had with Dr. Einstein was a nodding acquaintance. He would be walking up the street to his office most mornings, pretty much the same time I was walking down the street to my classroom. And I'm 17 years old, and I would nod to Dr. Einstein, and Dr. Einstein would nod at me. And my son says, "Why didn't you start a conversation with him?" And I said, at 17 years old, I had no idea what I would say to him. But it's still exciting that I saw him frequently and knew him for about 2 years before he passed away while I was at Princeton. I've described how I got to want to be on a radio with you. What is your journey as an engineer to be interested in the media?
Well, back in 1986, I was an aerospace engineer. And you remember that was the time in January when the Space Shuttle Challenger blew up. Well, a little before that, NASA was being criticized by many media across the United States and by our CBC here in Canada for not launching with the same frequency as the French Ariane rocket. So I called the producer of the major news show on CBC and I said, you can't be comparing the space shuttle, which is manned, with an unmanned vehicle because the safety requirements are entirely different. And they had no patience whatsoever. And like other media, they kept criticizing NASA for delaying the launches. Well, as you know, Jay, behind the scenes, what was going on is it was below freezing. I mean, there were icicles on the oranges in Florida, and the engineers were telling management, we don't know what the spacecraft is going to react like with, especially the O-rings and other, you know, joints within the spacecraft below freezing. They hadn't tested these out below freezing. And it was, oh man, it must have been something like at least 15 degrees colder than they had ever launched before. And so under pressure from the media, what happened is the executives and the bureaucrats within NASA overruled the engineers and they launched. And you know what happened, the O-rings leaked and the space shuttle blew up and they all died. And of course, then the CBC turned around and started criticizing NASA for launching exactly what they had, you know, they'd done what the CBC wanted. And so I called the CBC again. I said, look, what are you doing? Now you're criticizing for launching when you were pushing them to launch. And again, they had no patience whatsoever. So I thought, geez, these people, I have got to get into the press myself somehow. So I took a course at Algonquin College on, you know, how to get your writing published. And as they say, the rest of it is the others, you know, what happened next was I started to write about space. And it was only quite a few years later when I wrote about comparative planetology, which is exploring the planets and how that helps understand the Earth, that I wrote an article that made reference to climate change. And Tim Patterson, Professor Patterson at Carleton University, he used the article in his course. It was in our local newspaper, but he said, but this climate change stuff is all wrong. And I thought, who is this, you know, sort of denier funded by fossil fuels? So he brought me into his lab and he showed me, no, in fact, the evidence is not there. And so the rest is history. I started writing with Professor Patterson. And ever since then, climate change has become my thing. And, you know, it's just astounding how many of the climate change issues are just distorted by the press. And that really brings up, Jay, you know, the purpose for our show. I mean, how would you summarize it?
Well, thanks, Tom. We're going to spend the first half hour of today's initial program talking about the reason our show is important, and then spend several minutes talking about the biases in mainstream media, giving various examples, using some or all of the ideas we'll bring forward. Journalists used to consider it their solemn obligation to report on the issues they covered from a variety of perspectives. This is no longer the case, Tom. More than a decade ago, reporters abandoned the responsibility to be open to alternative viewpoints as the media organizations they worked for really became wholly owned subsidiaries of liberal, so-called progressive corporations. Then, as we got more and more of our news via the internet, Google, Facebook, Twitter, and other social media, Orwellian censorship really became the norm. If those of the listeners remember the book 1984, everything was censored. And the public now finds itself inundated with biased reporting and unable to get the whole story on a host of important issues. In this program, we break through this iron curtain of political correctness, giving listeners the other side of the story on issues in science, technology, politics, health, and even entertainment. We plan to make this show the listener's antidote to the propaganda of the Fourth Estate. And yeah, we continue from here with hopefully many, many subjects as the weeks go by on this program.
Well, you know, one thing I'd like to talk about with you and bring in experts, although actually I was going to say bring in experts on fitness. You are an expert on fitness, aren't you? You've written a book specifically on fitness. What's it called?
It's called Fit, Firm, and 50. And, you know, I'm 84 years old. I'm working full time as a writer and now on the radio. And I felt long ago, if I was going to be passionate about my professional work and do it for many, many decades, I needed to be very fit. And so I decided that fitness would be as much a part of my life as science. And I started doing things like the Hawaiian Ironman triathlon. And 1 year I did the Hawaiian Ironman nine times, and I became very well known for it. And one day after the race, a young man was listening to me giving advice to others. And he said, you know, you ought to go home and put all that down in a book before you forget it. And I took his advice. I went home, I think it was around 1989, and I spent 8 months writing what became a book, Fit, Firm, and 50. And it has kept me really in perfect shape. I doubt if there, I've been obviously very lucky, but there are not too many people 84 years old as lucky as I am. I've never actually been in a real doctor's office. I've had some orthopedic surgeries from athletic injuries, but I fondly call them carpenters. So yeah, fitness is a part of my life, and it's why I can keep working in my profession as a scientist and on this radio program.
Well, yeah, and you hold some sort of a record, don't you, for consecutive jumps month after month. What's that record you hold again?
Well, it's a skydiving. I started skydiving in August of 1978, something on a dare. Someone asked me if there was something I had never done that I'd like to do. And I said, yeah, jump out of a plane. And I did that, and I was instantly hooked. And I, from August of 1978, I jumped out of a plane in central Ohio, a place with cold winters, every month for 34 years and 11 months until a bicycle accident made me miss 3 months. But then I went back to jumping every month. But my record is jumping 35 winters, 34 months, 34 years and 11 months without a miss in a cold climate. That's 35 winters. A lot of people jokingly call it a record for stupidity because not many people want to jump in March, well, going backwards, December, January, February, and March of every single winter.
Yeah, and how cold is it when you're jumping in February and you're at like 20,000 feet?
Well, I jump from 12,000, and it's normally below, you know, it's freezing. I would say on the ground, many of the jumps, it's 10 degrees and well below zero at 12,000 where I leave the plane. But I wear a lot of clothes, and the plane fuselage is heated, and oh, you're so excited. The only thing that really is cold is the tip of your nose and the tips of your fingers. The most difficult part is the ground is hard, and you got to have a really good landing so you don't break anything when you land. I'm very good at landing and really have never had a trouble.
Yeah, although I understand you actually have pulled your emergency chute sometimes.
Well, I have 1,500 jumps, and I've averaged a reserve ride about every 100 jumps. I think I have 14 of them all together. And it's kind of exciting. I'm really good under pressure. I can tell you when my main doesn't open, I know exactly how to go through the emergency procedures to get my reserve parachute open. And that has never failed. And I worry about skydivers that have never had to use their reserve chute. You know, how are they under pressure? I'm pretty comfortable at it. I did find out when you only have a few seconds to save your life, you do not see your life pass before you. And you probably don't even pray. You're too busy trying to get another parachute over your head.
Huh, yeah. Well, I'm a fitness fanatic, too, as you know. And so, yeah, we'll have some really good discussions about fitness and some of the new discoveries. I was reading just recently in Scientific American that, in fact, aerobic exercise really not only helps you not decay as quickly mentally, it actually can lead to growing neurons and growing connections. This is new research that they say actually promotes the idea that we should, in fact, be exercising as long as we're alive. But, you know, Jay,
well, Tom, it's not as new as you think. I was reading about it 20 years ago, not so much in proven research projects, but a lot of good theories about it as much as 20 years ago. And I took it to heart. I, at 84, I'm reasonably sure I haven't lost a neuron. And I'm a career learner. I actually think I'm quite a bit smarter today than I was 20 years ago. So, yeah, mental health fitness, and they go hand in hand. There's no question. The old saying, a healthy body, healthy mind, is absolutely true.
Yeah, exactly. Now, getting back to the purpose for our show, like you were saying, the mainstream media has become totally distorted. And even now, I mean, when the internet started and they started having social media, one of the great attractions was that we could get around the censorship, the gatekeepers in mainstream media. And so, you know, hundreds of millions of people became very hooked on Facebook and all these other social media sources. But now they've brought down the hammer. They're actually censoring things as much as mainstream media. You know, like, this to me is really bad. And there's a really interesting example that we brought up in our article, Land of the Servile and Home of the Woke, which is on the America Out Loud website right now. And this is Amazon's decision to remove the book, which had the following title, When Harry Became Sally, Responding to the Transgender Movement. Now, this is written by conservative scholar Ryan Anderson, and Amazon has removed his book, and it's caused quite a furor. You might have noticed various senators have actually sent a letter to Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos saying, you know, what the heck's going on? I'll just read one quote from their letter because I think this really sums up social media censorship. By removing this book from its marketplaces and services, Amazon has unabashedly wielded its outsized market share to silence an important voice merely for the crime of violating woke groupthink. So, I mean, that really sounds, that sums it up, doesn't it, with the censorship that's going on in social media?
Well, it does, and I'll give you a simple reason for it, and we'll be exploring it in the coming weeks, but organizations like Google and Facebook and Twitter and Amazon are run by billionaires that have everything money can buy. And people like Bill Gates as well at Microsoft, they have nothing that they can't buy. So the only thing they don't have is power. All of these people really want to run the world. And they've all figured out that you can't get control of the world in a capitalist political system. It has to be socialist. It's only in a socialist system that the government that can take control of the entire population. That's what they are all trying to do. They're all together on this. And what you, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or how you feel about different people, that censorship is leading to a socialist system where the public is going to lose their freedoms. And the censorship you just described, Tom, is just the beginning of it.
Yeah, exactly. Here in Canada, the Rebel, called Rebel News, it's at rebelnews.com. It's very, very nice little website. They have 1.5 million subscribers to their YouTube channel, and they gather funding through their advertisements on the YouTube channels, but also through something they call live stream super chats, where while they're doing live stream videos, they have super chats on the right, and you can donate $50 or whatever to actually help them, but also get your chat brought up on air. And YouTube has decided, and apparently the reason is because Rebel News is questioning the lockdowns across the world, YouTube has decided to ban Rebel News from actually having any ads on their channel. And similarly, they're banning the live stream super chats. And, you know, Ezra Levant, who was the one who actually started Rebel News, and again, I encourage people to take a look. It's rebelnews.com. It's an amazing site. He actually said that it's going to cost them $400,000 a year. And I'll just quote him. He said, if we stop criticizing the COVID-19 lockdown, then they say we can reapply in 30 days and possibly get our ads back. But we would have to stop saying what we say. We'd have to say what they want us to say. And, you know, this brings up a really interesting issue, Jay. And that is these social media, the giants, YouTube, Amazon, Facebook, all this. Yeah, they're great at the technology. But I mean, what knowledge do they have about medical things like lockdown? So, why are they imposing their beliefs on all their participants?
Well, they want to rule the world. They want to rule our lives. Everybody in Canada, everybody in the United States. It's really a world movement to undermine capitalism and reduce personal freedom, and they become in charge. They absolutely do not have any special knowledge to be in charge, but it's in their best interest that the truth does not come out. And this is why I said earlier, the media today, the fourth estate, whether it's TV, radio, is now a wholly owned subsidiary of these people, of the Democrat Progressive Socialist Party. So that's why our listeners for some time now have not been getting the other side of the story. And that's the entire reason for our weekly show. And every week for an hour, we'll bring out issues that we're quite confident they've only heard one side of about, and that they're questioning, and they have a thirst for the other side of the story. And that's exactly what we're going to supply them with.
Yeah. You know, one issue that is extremely biased in the media, I mean, it's hard to believe in Canada, especially, is the climate change issue. I mean, if I go on a lot of these websites, you know, for the CBC and other media websites, and I put in an alternative point of view on climate change, they will cancel me like instantly. You know, I'll be banned from the site, et cetera. And you know, it's interesting because I have a Facebook page, and we'll put up the links to these different pages, CBC, et cetera, so people can see it themselves. But the bottom line is, I've found that suddenly when we start to get a lot of views and a lot of comments, that virtually overnight, about half a year ago, I suddenly went to zero views and zero comments. And yet there was nothing I did different. I had 5,000 followers and nobody was commenting. Nobody was voting up or anything. And my daughter, who, you know, understands the technology of social media better than I do, she said, "Oh yeah, you've been shadow banned." And if I understand rightly, it means that you're not actually overtly banned, it's because you're not breaking any rules. It's just there's something that's going on behind the scenes that prevents people from getting notifications to seeing your things. And I'll bet this is happening in lots of places, not just in climate change, but COVID, the lockdowns. I mean, do you think there's censorship in the media on that, for example, on the lockdowns?
There's censorship in the media on every issue, Tom. And just as we've talked about the social media companies controlling everything that we put on the internet today, climate change issue provides them with the same kind of situation where they increase control. Man-caused climate change is entirely a fraud. However, it is a mechanism that has worked magnificently for socialist, communist movement throughout the world. Because if you can control all the carbon dioxide emitted from oil and gas, from fossil fuels, you eliminate the major source of energy around the world. If you can control the carbon dioxide that we emit from our breath, you're going to control how many children people will have, and that's the total control of population. And since carbon dioxide is a world emission problem, you have to have a powerful UN. You really need a one world government. And that is the direction they're working in. They want to eliminate fossil fuels, replace with wind and solar, something they know cannot be done. And when we run shorter and shorter of energy, the government now is rationing energy and they have total control over our lives. So climate change is supplying the same kind of thing as media censorship has been supplying for many years.
Yeah, well, that's a great way to end the first half of our show. And what we should talk about in the second half is we're briefly going to introduce many of the topics that we're going to cover in depth in future programs. And we'll be bringing in guests who specialize in various topics on any particular show. So stay tuned. We'll be back right after the break.
Now, never before in our history have we witnessed the level of hatred that is now being waged against our law enforcement. While anarchist groups create havoc and overwhelm our first responders, these same groups and their corporate supporters are calling for the police forces to be shrunk and defunded. What can you and I do to make a difference? How can we stand up for what is right and to show our support. That's what I'm going to tell you about this incredible new platform. It's called ShopToTheRight.com. And it's a new shopping platform that will help you find businesses that align with your values. They feature products made in America. They support veteran-owned businesses, as well as our law enforcement community. This is a time when we need to stick together. We need to shop together, and we need to support each other. It's time for you and I to make some noise and stand up to protect our country. And one easy way to do that is to shop and give our money to companies that don't seek to destroy our way of life. So join the fight for liberty. ShopToTheRight.com. Support those American businesses that support law enforcement and veterans.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
AmericaOutloud.com is the alternative from the agenda-driven globalist. Here, we take on the challenges of our generation so that we can preserve future generations. On-demand podcast or real-time talk radio with our streaming apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back to the program. We're going to spend this part of today's show briefly describing some of the many topics we'll be discussing in future shows with, as Tom said, we're going to have some specialized guests in the coming weeks. First and foremost, we are going to cover climate change, as we've already discussed briefly. This is especially timely given that Earth Day is coming up on the 22nd of April. And as usual, stopping climate change, the big part of that event.
Yeah, exactly. And people have probably not heard yet, but Biden, President Biden, has big plans for Earth Day. He's announced an Earth Day summit. And in fact, on March 26th, here's what he said. Today, President, this is from a press release out of the White House on March 26th. Today, President Biden invited 40 world leaders to the Leaders Summit on Climate Change he will host on April 22nd and 23rd. Now, this is interesting, Jay. The virtual Leaders Summit will be live streamed for public viewing. So we should have a great time, Jay, actually getting in there and correcting the many mistakes.
Yes, it's going to be a travesty. It has been since the beginning of all the Earth Days. And with Biden in charge, it's going to be either funnier or more serious, depending on which side you look at it. I'm very optimistic, frankly, because I think he's going to be pushing the population of North America over the edge. More and more people are going to be recognizing the absurdity of the kind of things such as in the Green New Deal that Biden is going to try to implement. So it's going to get crazier and more and more level-headed people. Certainly all the people listening to our program are going to begin to realize that their friends and neighbors that may have been taken in by these issues in past years are going to be more suspicious of what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting because in the press release, they were boasting about how the United States has gotten back into Paris, which is interesting because most of the world actually treats Paris as a treaty. And if I understand your system properly in the United States, that should have gone to the Senate for their approval. Isn't that true?
Yes, it is true. It is a shame. Obama joined the Paris Accord. It was a treaty. It should have gone to the Senate. It never would have passed. But he did it alone as an executive order. A brilliant physicist at Princeton University was chosen by Trump to be his climate specialist for Trump's third year in office. And Will Happer is a good friend of mine. And he said it was a year of frustration that the people entrenched within the government simply did not allow the issue of climate change to come up and see the light of day as it should have, as a real scientific issue rather than entirely a political issue.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, just to explain to people what Trump, and this is, I think, what you're referring to, what he should have done is two things. He should have pulled out of the Framework Convention on Climate Change, which is the underlying thing that boosts and supports Paris. But he also should have had the endangerment finding re-examined, and actually, because I mean, that says that CO2 is harmful and they can control it under the Clean Air Act. And yet he didn't do that. And you're saying you think it's because people inside the White House were not really letting him go as far forward as he'd like to go.
That's exactly correct, Tom. The endangerment finding is certainly the worst decision in my mind the Supreme Court has ever made. The EPA convinced the Supreme Court that under the Clean Air Act, carbon dioxide was a contaminant, and therefore they had the right to control it. Now, they told lie after lie. They presented data that was false, but the Supreme Court people, not scientifically trained, accepted their falsehoods and ruled 5-4 in favor of carbon dioxide being a contaminant and being a danger to the public. That gave EPA the right to control it. And from the moment Trump was elected, most solid scientists felt the first thing he ought to do was move the issue back to the Supreme Court to be re-argued. And it really was in the hands of the EPA people he appointed, and his first appointees were not as strong as we had hoped, and they'd never had the nerve to bring it back. And again, you know, being president of the United States, you've got so many issues. He reasoned that climate change wasn't one that he wanted to use all of, you know, his political savvy and the currency he had being president. And so he let it go. And while we regret that, I have to feel that he had, good reason for it. And he did so many other outstanding things for the United States, all of which are being reversed now by Biden. But I think that, as I said earlier, he's pushing so many people over the edge that they're really only going to have 2 years in power. They'll keep the presidency for 4 years, but I'm convinced they'll lose the Congress, the Senate, and the House of Representatives because of the insanity that he's doubling down on.
I hope you're right. You know, I just point out to people that this meeting that's coming up on Earth Day on April 22nd, Biden is actually pushing them to accomplish more than Paris. Right now, in the Paris Agreement, the U.S. committed to reducing its greenhouse gas emissions. And by the way, that's sort of code for carbon dioxide, because in the United States, about 80% of the greenhouse gas emissions that you are emitting is carbon dioxide. But anyway, the target is currently in the Paris Agreement that there'd be a 26 to 28% reduction below 2005 levels by 2025. But if you actually look at what Biden is saying for the summit that's coming up, he says by the time of the summit, so this must be happening behind the scenes right now, the United States will announce an ambitious 2030 target as its new nationally determined contribution under the Paris Agreement. So he's trying to actually up the requirements. And he's actually says here, the president urged leaders to use the summit as an opportunity to outline how their countries will also contribute to stronger climate ambition. because, of course, the whole thing is shooting towards what they call net zero by 2050. Now, can you explain that? What does that actually mean, net zero by 2050?
Well, it means that there will be no carbon dioxide emissions, which would mean there would be no fossil fuels, coal, oil, natural gas being used. This is ridiculous. This cannot happen. And the Paris Accord itself allows China and India to produce all the carbon dioxide they want until the year 2030. They're off the hook as a developing nation. So whatever they're talking about, these are impossibilities that cannot happen, but they are going to create some pain along the way. So they can have all the targets they want. They're not going to happen. I mean, California as a state wants to be net zero by 2035, which means they have to run the entire state on wind and solar. It can't be done. So it's really stuff to be laughed at, to be scoffed at, but it's going to punish a lot of people whose along the way, their energy bills are going to skyrocket.
Yeah. Now, when they talk about net zero, I understand that they're going to start counting some sort of credits. And how does that work? Are they going to start saying trees absorb this much or farmland absorbs this much? And so somehow they're able to jig it so that they end up with a net zero?
Tom, that's exactly right. They're going to count trees. They're going to count farming. They'll count anything where nature absorbs carbon dioxide, which, of course, it absorbs a ton of it. The oceans absorb carbon dioxide. Vegetation all absorbs carbon dioxide. So, yes, they will cheat on their budget. And perhaps at some point they're approaching net zero, but it's a joke. But along the way, the most important thing is to eliminate coal, natural gas, and all other fossil fuels from being used to create energy. And therefore, the cost of energy to the poorest people is going to skyrocket. And essentially, they want to keep people in poverty. The greatest thing you can do for poor people in the world is giving them inexpensive energy. And that is going to end under this administration, at least for as long as they're in power. But it's also where the Paris Accord and all the other countries that want a one world government, a socialist government, that's where they're going to. So where the whole world is going to suffer more in the next 2 years as to energy than it has in the last 10 years. But because it's become so draconian, so terrible, I'm convinced that people across the world, surely in the United States, maybe in Canada, are going to wake up to the fact they do not want these people in charge any longer.
Yeah, exactly. You know, one really good thing that Trump did concerning climate change is he expressed doubt about the idea that we're causing dangerous climate change. In Canada, our conservatives are afraid to do that because they say, well, a public opinion is such and such, and we have to go with the flow. But, you know, it's interesting, Jay, one of the things that we were talking about the other day is the fact that public opinion is largely driven by the opinion of the elites in society. And so if you get people like President Trump saying that he doesn't believe the climate scare, doesn't that actually help shift public opinion?
Yes, I definitely does. I think things are going to be changing dramatically in the coming months. Corporate America's placating climate extremism will soon reap sharply diminished returns. Companies instead need to wake up to the climate charade, with more of them pushing back on excesses. Corporations, including fossil fuel companies, have long funded the climate change global warming movement to virtual signal and avoid controversy by paying off their green enemies. Corporate obeisance to climate activists may seem wise in the short term, but it will never be enough. They will never be satisfied, and their bottom lines are going to be hurt by what they're doing, which is essentially supporting the folly of the whole Green New Deal that President Biden now is four square behind.
Oh, yeah. And in fact, he's proposed a $2.2 trillion Green New Deal bill. But that's not enough. I mean, the climate extremists in Congress, they want $10 trillion. I mean, isn't Biden going to somehow realize eventually that you can't please these people? I mean, if you give them, you know, X, they're going to want 10 times X. I mean, I don't think it's a good strategy to try and please these people at all.
Now, he's gone from $2 trillion, and the others in Congress want $10 trillion. And, of course, they can supply the $10 trillion as long as the printing presses don't break down. But with that kind of money being spent and not supported in any real way by the economy, we're going to see inflation in this country, and that's going to hurt an awful lot of people. And inflation hurts the poorest, the lowest economic part of our society. So they're going to be paying the piper. They're not going to get away with this for long. While we don't have a presidential election for 4 years, we have a congressional election in 2 years where 500, all of our Congress, House of Representatives people are up for election after just 2 years, and a third of our 100 senators are up for election. I think we're going to see that. I think all the things they're doing in climate change and the Green New Deal are writing the platforms on which new representatives and senators will run for election 2 years down the road. So, you know, people think that we're involved in 4 years of torment with this progressive socialist government. I think we're only in for 2 years, that once they do not have the House and Senate, the limits on Mr. Biden and what he can do with his executive orders will become very significant.
Yeah, I hope you're right. But, you know, people on the left are always saying, oh, the consensus of world scientists agree. And you've actually written just recently for the Committee for Constructive Tomorrow, CFAC.org. People can actually look that up, by the way, CFAC.org, an excellent website. You wrote about Michael Creighton's way of thinking concerning consensus. And can you summarize that briefly?
Yes. Michael Creighton in 2003 gave a landmark lecture at Caltech University in which he focused on the fact that consensus has absolutely no place in science. And one of the things that really showed this, and going back to your comment that I knew Albert Einstein, many years ago, a bunch of German scientists wrote a book collectively that said, the title of which was 100 German Scientists Who Disagree with Albert Einstein's Theory of Relativity. And Einstein commented, if I was wrong, it would only take one scientist to prove me wrong. Consensus has no place in science. It has a place in politics. You vote on issues. In science, you prove things with experiments, and those experiments have to be able to be replicated. So what everybody, all of our listening audience right now has heard comment, 97% of scientists believe that man is influencing the temperature of the planet. Number one, the idea that 97% of scientists could agree on anything is absurd, but it would not matter. Consensus is not part of science. Anybody that claims consensus is saying they don't want to argue the case on facts. They say the science is settled. The science is never settled. Science is all about gathering new data and coming up with information. Most of the great, for instance, medical breakthroughs have occurred with people who did not accept conventional science, that broke out, got more data. One of my favorite ones is ulcers. We always thought ulcers were caused by a type A, a personality. It was your personality that caused ulcers. But a couple scientists running upstream, so to speak, in Australia found that it was a bacteria in the gut that caused ulcers, and it wasn't your personality. Medical breakthroughs for 200 years have generally been created by people that went against the consensus. It has no place in science.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, talking about medicine, that actually reminds me, in the University of Alberta, there's an epidemiologist by the name of Dr. Ari Jaffe. He actually wrote a paper just recently. He used to support the lockdown, by the way, but he's changed his mind. And that actually brings up a new topic, which really should be based more on science than just simply groupthink. I mean, here's the name of his paper from October, COVID-19, Rethinking the Lockdown Groupthink. And I'll just quote him directly. He said, I'm truly worried that the lockdown approach is going to devastate economies and the future for our children and our grandchildren. And he calculated the cost of lockdowns in Canada is at least 10 times higher than the benefits in terms of population health and well-being. He actually shows that if you look at it worldwide, it would be at least five times worse, the lockdowns, and perhaps as much as 50 times worse than the actual benefit. I mean, what do you think? Is the lockdown perhaps just completely blown out of proportion?
Yeah, I think that just about everything that has been done in handling the Chinese virus that has spread around the world has been done wrong. I mean, clearly, many people have been sickened, many people have died, but it has been handled poorly. And the harm done clearly has been quintupled or more than if saner minds realized that the kids should stay in school, that masks were a way of getting people to conform and rarely worked. You'll see ads on the radio and TV all the time. Wear your mask. They still want people to conform without any scientific proof that any of these things were ever efficacious. And of course, we know that the virus attacked very few small young children, and the kids could always have stayed in school. There was no proof of social distancing by 6 feet. All of it has been a disaster, really run by politicians, not scientists at all.
Now, you went to a conference, the Doctors for Disaster Preparedness in Las Vegas. Were they wearing masks?
No, not one. I gave a lecture on an issue relating to medicine and health. There were 100 scientists in the meeting room last August, and not one person wore a mask. Now, the hotel required everyone to wear a mask in public spaces, but in our meeting rooms, none of the MDs wore masks. And there were 3 papers given at the 2-day conference on masks themselves, showing beyond a shadow of a doubt that the masks were actually useless in protecting against the COVID virus. And we were listening to doctors who wore masks conventionally in operating rooms. They had to wear a mask to be sure that nothing dripped out of their mouths into an incision. So masks had a real value. But in terms of preventing the COVID-19 virus, they were essentially worthless. And in fact, they felt they were more than worthless in the sense that you were, you know, collecting bacteria in your mask and that they actually were unhealthy.
Wow. So these are doctors who actually studied disaster preparedness, and they said that we shouldn't be wearing masks. That's amazing. You know, actually interesting, Rebel News, and again, I boost this website, rebelnews.com. They actually showed that one of our major health officials was telling us not to wear masks about 10 months ago, and now is telling us we have to wear masks. And she never said that we, you know, they just completely changed their point of view. And this brings up another issue, Jay, which we will have to touch on, and that is the opening of your border. The American border on the south is becoming like a sieve. I mean, what's going on there? It's like really kind of scary when you see these people showing up in caravans, massive numbers of minors too. Like, what's happening in the American border? I mean, they're not showing us. There's something going on there.
Well, I think what's going on, quite frankly, is the Democratic Party wants more voters. And by opening the border and letting thousands stream in and looking after them, actually housing them, not comfortably because they're crowded in facilities, but feeding them to a certain extent, educating them, ultimately sending them to towns across America, they're increasing their voting base. I mean, that's what it's all about. And it's going to keep on going. We no longer have an immigration policy, and they want more people to come in, and they're looking after them. And it's ridiculous. I'm optimistic. I don't think they can bring enough people in to sway the election in 2022 in House districts across the country. But what they're doing is terrible. And the sad part about it is they're giving free education and free food and free housing to people coming across the border illegally when they're not looking after the homeless people and the lower income people in this country that could use more help, and they're here legally. So it's a very sad state of affairs. And they're not even allowing politicians at the border to see what they're doing. I mean, what they're doing is so opaque. There have been news people down there trying to find out how many have crossed the border, everything that's going on. And this government has managed to hide all of the facts and all the truth and all the numbers, other than the fact that we know clearly they've opened the border to any illegal immigrants that can walk across.
Yeah, I understand that a number of Republican senators went to the border and they were asked not to take any pictures. And they, of course, what? You know, like they're there as a fact-finding mission. And in fact, they did take pictures. And I was seeing pictures of children by the hundreds in cages. I mean, it looks like a pretty awful situation. And it really is interesting, Jay, because it kind of begs the question. The left are saying that they're social justice warriors and they're concerned about the homeless and everything else. And yet they promote policies that will make the cost of electricity skyrocket, which would hurt the homeless people the most, treating illegal aliens better than the homeless people. I mean, they seem like complete hypocrites because they're not social justice. They're just promoting woke, progressive mentality, and to heck with the poor.
That's exactly correct. But again, my optimism says they can only go so far, and they'll have gone that far in the 18 months they have left until the 2022 election cycle. There are few people I'm knowing. I would say that 15% of the population are radical liberals that would support anything the Democrats do, regardless of what it is. Then we have half the country clearly that voted for Mr. Trump, and then a significant portion of tens of millions of people that probably didn't like Trump, voted for Biden, are seeing what's going on, and they are exasperated, and they're going to come to the conclusion they made a huge mistake voting against Trump for an administration that is not doing right by our own population.
Yeah. And, you know, Jay, one thing I do want to get into in some of our programs is looking at whether or not the amount of fraud in the election was such that it would have actually caused Biden to win over Trump. Now, some people say, in fact, the official line that we see in the mainstream media is no fraud here, folks. Move along, move along. Yet in every election, there's fraud. So, I mean, to say there's no fraud, that's kind of ridiculous. Of course, there's fraud. There's always been fraud in elections. The question is it enough that Biden won really in an unfair fashion? And I don't know if you've seen this, but the physicist Ed Barry has done a very detailed analysis of the election. And, you know, we should talk more about that because I don't think that case is closed at all. What do you think?
Well, I actually do think it's closed in terms of making any changes or bringing any significant amount of factual material to light. But your first statement is so correct. There's always been fraud. I mean, to say there's no fraud in this election is ridiculous because you can find fraud in the elections in all of our lives. But the level of this fraud clearly has exceeded anything we've seen before. But I don't think, I mean, when the Supreme Court turned it down and said they had no jurisdiction, that was the end of thinking that anything could be changed. But I do think that now all eyes are going to be on the next election. And while most pessimistic people feel they can cheat in the next set of elections, which is over 500 districts in the House of Representative and 30 states in the Senate, I think with everybody's eyes looking at it, and even some states like Georgia changing their election laws by simply wanting a photo ID, there's not much you can do in the world today in this country without a photo ID. And yet the Democrats are saying by requiring a photo ID, you're working against the poorer population, particularly the Black population. And I've never met anybody that doesn't have a photo ID, but I don't think they can cheat on the next election. And again, I'm very optimistic that a lot of it will be cleaned up as hard as they try. They started cheating the second Trump election the day he was elected. They had 4 years to do it. They have 2 years now to cheat in the next set of House and Senate elections. But I think there are going to be so many eyes on it. I do not think they will get away with it.
Yeah, well, I hope you're right. Well, we've got to wrap up, Jay. That was a really good first show. It was great fun speaking with you. And, you know, in future shows, we'll be concentrating on the gun situation in the United States. We'll be concentrating in the next show, actually, on Earth Day, because the focus is going to shift to Biden. I mean, Earth Day has been totally hijacked in many years by the climate activists. So, yeah, we can focus on that. So that's it for this week. And it's great talking to you, Jay, with The Other Side of the Story.